Good morning, everybody. My name is Sandy Hickox. I'm an alcoholic. I am honored to be here.
What a beautiful.
And I'm also scared to death. My home group is the ladies' room in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And the last Friday night I attended, we had 77 women there. And I don't know about for y'all, but that for me, that is very impressive. The fact that I want to hang out with that many women, number one. This morning I was praying that God just give me whatever he wanted me to tell y'all, because I don't ever know, and my message is never the same. So if you've heard me talk before, this one's going to be different, because God's like that with me. And I'm the type of person that I need visual. I need a sign, and it don't have to be a burning bush anymore. And this morning I got to see that rainbow. And I don't know about for y'all, but I've never seen the end of a rainbow, and today I got to see that. And the story about it being a pot of gold and all that, and I found my pot of gold here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's brought me to Hawaii. I have seen a lot of things I've never seen before here. Some of them last night. We were talking about it at breakfast. I have never seen a man dressed up like a woman before. I mean, and then I've been informed that I just didn't know it. Me and my husband, I want to thank the committee for inviting me, and I'm grateful my husband got an opportunity to come out here. You know, he had to show me that Hawaii was not one place. It was like a bunch of islands together. And I didn't know that. And I hope I get to that part of my story. We got to play tourist, and we got to drive up the mountainside, and Wendell's got the nautical name for that. I don't know. I can't remember what that is. And then we got to go up the windward side. And I got to see both sides of paradise, I was talking to Tony about the people in the tents there, and she said, girl, what better place to be in a tent, And it made me think about a time I was homeless, and we come back from that side of the island, and we were real quiet, because I had come so far. Today I live in a house, I don't have to live in a car, and Alcoholics Anonymous has given me that. And I didn't come here to get sober. I come here to get my job back. I don't know about y'all, I didn't know I had a problem with anything other than just getting caught a lot. I got arrested. This is making my head itch, so I'm taking it off. Okay. I appreciate that. I hope it's not offensive that I did that. I come to, and there's a knocking at the door, and I go to the door, and I see the police car, which was not anything different. I lived in that type of neighborhood, but usually they were looking for the guy next door. And I opened them up because I was going to tell them where he lived, and they shoved me down in a chair I had beside the door, and they went through my house like I've seen them do on TV, and they found what they were looking for, and they carried me to jail. And I couldn't explain to them that at that time that all that they found was they had it with possession with intent to distribute. And I couldn't tell them that all those pills they found was what I took when I'd go to work, and then we'd get to the other end of the road, and then I would drink all night with the guys. And then you can't drink all night and stay up all day without a little help, and that was my help. And they found another little bag of goodies, and that was my second count of possession with intent to distribute. And I couldn't tell them at that time that, once I stayed up all day working with the help of my friends, I need another friend to let me go to sleep that night so I could go to work the next day. And in that pistol that they found was an illegal possession of a firearm. And I you know, it, I couldn't tell him at that time, but that's what I needed to protect me from hobos because I was working on the railroad. And I never seen a hobo till I got sober and come into these rooms. So they carried me to jail. And I don't know about y'all, but at this phase of my development, I didn't have money to post bond, and I didn't know anybody like Linda. And, oh, Linda, thank you for the hospitality and being our host and stuff. I appreciate that. And so I couldn't call him because she might answer the phone, and she wouldn't let me talk to him if she did. You know, wives are like that. So I finally, yeah, they're hard to get along with sometimes. So I finally called the deputy sheriff into calling him in case she was home, you know, and asked him to come get me out of jail, and he did. And I went straight to the bar to see if I was missed, and that's when I found out that they wouldn't let me go back to work until I had an investigation. And here I am. I'm fixing to lose the only thing that I am, and that is my job. And there's another knock on the door, and it's this guy that, I mean, we used to party down, and this guy was, he had been somewhere, and he'd come back talking and have sentences, so we just kind of left him alone. You know, I'll give you an example. We get off work one night, he'd be on our crew, and we get off work day or night, whatever, and we'd say, well, come on, go have a drink with us. He said, oh, I'm not drinking, one day at a time. Okay, well, we'll see you tomorrow, you know, and we'd go on off and drink. And then he would, you know, he was just talking about easy does it and live and let live and let go and let God. And we just thought he was nuts because he'd never finished a sentence. Well, here he is at my door. And it's been a long time since we partied because he's talking in half sentences and he's not drinking one day at a time and all that. And here he is at my door. And he told me, he said, I know how you can get your job back. I said, sign me up. Well, he signed me up for treatment. And then I had two old guys come to my house and tell me stories that should have went to their grave with them. I mean, I did not today I understand they were trying to 12-step me. Back then, I just thought they were being dirty old men, you know. But, you know, when I sit there, I mean, I'm from the South, in case you can't tell from my voice. You know, you got to be polite and listen to old farts, you know, because respect and all that. And I sit there and I listen to them. I'm going, man. I wouldn't drink if I was you. So I get ready to go to treatment. Now, I don't know that you can go to treatment drunk or high or any of that other kind of stuff. I mean, I'm like a little schoolgirl waiting on the bus. You know, I got my pants pressed. I got my little sack packed, and I'm ready to go to treatment. I mean, like I'm going to school. Well, I didn't know you could go drunk or nothing. And then we get in the car, and one of the old guys that come and confessed or whatever he did, and his wife were the ones that carried me to treatment, and she was in Al-Anon. And we're off to see the wizard, you know, off to go to see the treatment center or whatever. And so we had to drive like 2.5 hours. Now, I'm from a small town you could put in this hotel or convention center. And, I mean, it's real small. I mean, what is it, like 10,000 for the whole county at that time? So, I mean, it's small. I mean, y'all got at the meetings y'all go to probably. But anyway, we're in the car and we're going to treatment, and I'm realizing as we're going down there, it's like a two-hour drive, 2.5 hours. I am making a mistake because they're telling me stories about treatment, and I'm going, uh-uh. And then I made a decision that I could do anything, you know, I could do anything for a certain amount of time. I mean, for God's sakes, I've been married, right? I mean, you could do anything for a little bit. So I made I said, okay, you know, whatever to get my job back. And then when we get there, I get real scared. He's all signing papers or whatever he does. And this Al-Anon's got a hold to me. She ain't letting go. Now, when I went to treatment, I'm probably half the size I am now because I was doing a lot of running and gunning and not eating a whole lot. So, I mean, she had a hold of me and she wasn't letting go. And I'm shaking like a leaf, not like I am now. And I'm scared. I'm really scared because this time I'm in a corner and I can't get out. You know, there's no way I can maneuver it. There's no great plan I can come up with that's going to keep me from going to prison. I already know that. So, but my lawyer said this would look good. And this other guy told me I could get my job back. So here I am. And this Al-Anon's got a hold of me, and, you know, she walks me down this long hall. It looks like it's, you know, in my mind's eye. And, you know, my perception about some things has changed, but some, you know, something that happened in a week could seem like years to me because I lived so hard and so fast in a short period of time. And she's walking me down this corridor, and we get to these double doors, and, you know, there's a, you know, she opens it and shows me through, which ain't no big deal, except I didn't have a handle on my side. I mean, there's a window there. Yeah. There's a window there. I got my nose plastered against the window, and I'm crying because I'm scared. And I don't cry pretty. I mean, I blow snot everywhere. Makeup runs. I mean, I turn red. It is not pretty. You know, I'm plastered up against that window, and I know if she ever looks back, I got her. You know, she'll come get me. You know, that heifer walked all the way down that hall and never did turn around and look back. I hated Al-Anon. I'm sitting in this treatment center, and this lady comes by, and she's got to fill out paperwork, and I'm in trouble, and I know enough not to confess. And so the only thing I remember she told me, she said, honey, you don't ever have to feel the way you feel inside ever again, unless you choose to. You know, and I've been feeling like crap inside most of my life. I think I come out of the chute 6 foot tall. When you're 50, it's wonderful, but when you're 8 and 9, you look like a retard. You know, because you're in the back of every line, and you're, you know, I'm long and tall, and that's all, and people were picking on me, and I, you know, why don't you turn sideways and stick your tongue out and look like a zipper? You know, I hated it. I hated them. I hated you. I hated school. I hated everything. You know, and I remember when I was real young, I'm, golly, probably 7 or 8, I'm looking out the window at the full moon, wishing I was anywhere else except where I was. My mama raised 4 of us by herself. I'm the only girl. I'm the next to the oldest. I've got an older brother and then 2 younger brothers. And I hate it. I hate who I am. I hate my mom. I hate my brothers. I mean, I got a perfect brother that does everything right, and I never can compare. I got a younger brother that is like my baby, and then my older brother, which is ruler of the house. And I had been feeling bad, and when I was about 14, Mama said, I thought Mama kicked me out. Okay, this is taking my breath, so I hope I'm not offensive. But I have asthma, so I don't want to get up here and have an attack on you. But thank you for the gesture. So I just got to breathe. Mama always wanted me to be perfect, like the little perfect brother I had, and I had a brother that was like the ruler of the house, and, you know, all my life, you know, I was an embarrassment to them. And me and Mama had a discussion about whether she kicked me out or whether she asked me to leave. She said, honey, I told you you couldn't drink in my room, so obviously she kicked me out. And I started doing the things necessary for me to survive out there. In this little small town, I was living with a guy before living with people were fashionable. You know, I was working in this little restaurant and income my solution. Because I just knew if I had the right man or had enough money, I would be all right. And in he come, and I made his business my business. And it wasn't long we were living together. And it wasn't long after that he built a nightclub where I'd have a place to work. Now, I'm not old enough to be in that nightclub, but the sheriff and deputies, they drink for free on Saturday night, so who cares? So I started living like that one day at a time. You know, and we would get in this bar on Saturday night, and it's like you see on TV. You know, you bring your bottle in, and there'd be a band, and about midnight, the fights would break out. I was in the middle of that fight. I remember one Friday night, we were having such a good time. You know, because I get to drinking, and I get a little flirty, feely, touchy, and boyfriend behind the bar don't like that, so he comes over the top of the bar, and takes care of me. And I'd come to the next morning, find out I was in a fight and I lost, you know, and I didn't look pretty. I mean, we fought a lot, and, you know, when I was all liquored up, I'm like a little chihuahua dog. I ain't got sense enough to shut up, and I think I'm a lot bigger than what I am. So, I mean, he would tell me, just sit down and shut up, and I'm And he'd say, if you don't sit down and shut up, I'm going to make you sit down and shut up. And he did, and I did. I mean, so. And I lived like that one day at a time. Oh, thank you very much. Appreciate that. And I got to thinking about that in that treatment center. I got to thinking about, I remember one day walking down the street, and I'm bad hungover, and I see my brothers on the other side of that street, and I walk my like I don't know them. And I know they wish they didn't know me, because I was an embarrassment to them for a long time. And I thought about that in that treatment center. And I thought about how many times I've been prayed over, and how many times that I've been down there to, you know, been in front of the preacher and get, you know, down south. They can dip you, or they can dunk you, or they can put you in the river and you can really get it, okay? Well, I tried all of that, and I never did get saved or whatever that is. I mean, because I'd go out of all that, and I'd just be wanting to have a good time with the preacher, you know? It just, something didn't take with me. And I just knew I was going to go to hell for it. I mean, I've been told by many people that I would, because I'd done crossed whatever line. And I thought about that in that treatment center. And she said, I never had to feel like that. You know, and I had been told that before, but I didn't believe it. Because, you know, I heard, come have faith like us. But I did not hear, do what we do and you'll get what we get. And maybe they told me that. I don't know. You know, I got this disease of perception, and I know that. And a lot of times what I'm told and what I hear is not the same. And that's true today. So I get in that treatment center, and I start doing what they asked me to do. Finish up my little 30-day stint, and I do an inventory, and I find out that if I'd sit down and shut up, I probably wouldn't got hit so much from that guy. You know, because my big book tells me that I got to look at my part and disregard the other person involved entirely. Not just when it's convenient or not on Tuesday or entirely. And I'm going to tell you, I hear people say, oh, I love this program. They hadn't done that. Because I always like to blame you. I don't ever like taking responsibility for my actions. But the first time I done an inventory, it was my attempt to do that. And I found out that the reason I'm an alcoholic has nothing to do with my mama raising us by herself. It has nothing to do with my then perceived perfect brother. It didn't have anything to do with any of that. What it has to do is when I take a drink, I instantly change. That's what makes me alcoholic. It don't matter whether I drink a quart, a pint, or a gallon. Once I take that drink, I am different. I see things different. I see you different. I see me different. And that's the magic. And I chased it a long time. I do the 30 days in this treatment center, and they say, well, you're not quite ready to go home. We want you to go to a halfway house. You know, and I'm doing this to get my job back. And I said, fine, sign me up. The only problem with that is they wanted to see me with a halfway house with women. Now, I know what you do with a big pack of boys. I have not a clue about the women. And they're wanting to see me off with these women. I said, well, okay, I'll get my job back. So I go into this halfway house, and they have rules, and they want you to, like, travel in groups, and they want you to wear all your clothes. Well, I don't even own the clothes that they want me to wear, you know. So, I mean, down south, if you're an alcoholic like me, you know, you get in the back seat of the car, and stuff comes off, and then you're trying to find it or get it back on gets to be a challenge. Because I'd be drunk and I'd get tickled trying to find a bra, a pair of panties, and it'd get hung up under the seat, and that's back when you could get under the seat. if you got it out, it'd come out all greasy and everything, and if I could get my panties on, I'd wind up with both legs in one hole, and then I'd fall, and, I mean, it just got to be a damn mess, so I quit wearing any of that, because it got to be too much trouble. I mean, you'd almost get hurt getting that crap back on. And then I get tickled, and when I get tickled, I can't do nothing but whip my pants. And then, you know, that's ridiculous, too. So, but anyway, now they want me to wear this stuff again. I got to remember, I hope I don't ever forget, that when I come to y'all, I didn't even know what size underwear I wore. And I had to confess. Just like what happens today, when I don't know how to do something and I get rid of that pride and that ego and I say, I don't know how to do it, I don't know what size, y'all always help me. And that's what those women in that halfway house did. They shoved me in the dressing room and they started parading bras and panties across the store and I tried them on and they helped me. And that's what y'all do every time, that I'll get rid of my self-centeredness and my pride and my ego and let you know that I don't know. That's what happens here. And y'all, they didn't laugh at me that day. Now, we laughed like hell the next, but it wasn't funny that day. You know, and I found out that the reason I didn't like women is because I thought they were like me. And if they were like me, they wouldn't be trusted. You know, and it's because you had what I wanted. I didn't care. I went for it. You know, I didn't have any morals, any values, any of that kind of stuff. Well, I stayed in that halfway house, and finally they let me come home. And because of the process of the steps, I'd forgiven this Al-Anon. And I had asked her to sponsor me. Because, again, I got sober in a little small town that had one group, one meeting a week. And there wasn't any women staying sober. So this Al-Anon woman and this AA man, they double-teamed me. You know, and she taught me about being a woman in the daytime. Because I didn't have a clue about that. I knew what they did at night, but I didn't know what they did in the daytime. And this Al-Anon lady helped me with that. You know, she showed me how to put my clothes together. And she showed me, you know, we had a lot of, she don't, back then, I mean, it was a family thing. I mean, there was somebody at her house all the time. The coffee pot was always on. There was food always there. And there was always a drunk somewhere. You know, and you never knew when you pulled up at their house who you were going to see. And that's just the way it was. I mean, we were like a pack of ducks. You see one, you see us all. And and she taught me about entertaining, and she taught me about the dressing. And you know, we'd sit around that kitchen table with a cup of coffee, and we'd have that big book, and we'd talk about the program and God in our lives. And that's the way I got sober. And I think a lot of the guys were scared of this Al-Anon lady, so they kind of left me alone. You know, and I didn't know you could choose a home group. There was just one group in our town, and that was my home group. There was a lot of things I didn't know. There was this old white-headed guy, sober longer than God. I think at that time he probably had, I don't know, 8 years or something. And yeah, that perception, huh? And the Al-Anon man and the AA woman had warned, I mean, the Al-Anon woman and the AA man had warned me about him because he was trying his best to run newcomers off. You know, he would, you know, if somebody would tell him, I'm fighting it every day, he said, well, surrender. And somebody would want to hit him. You know, we would always go to the meetings just to see who's going to hit him because he would piss people off. I mean, it's not kind and loving like we've seen here. I mean, we would go to the meetings, and I mean, somebody would be up in his face just letting him have it. He'd walk off with a smirk. He loved it. You know, he had this thing that nobody had ever seen before. It's called a Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he quoted out of his book. You know, because people would get from the podium, in the book it says, he said, well, my book don't say that. And he would say it out loud in front of them. And I mean, I'll give you an example on how he was. When I got out of treatment, I'm an alcoholic and an addict, right? So I went to this, my home group, and I introduced myself as an alcoholic and an addict. And he said, yeah, and I got hemorrhoids too. What has that got to do with anything? He said, that's exactly right. And I cussed him all the way home. He taught me how to pray. Every Monday night I would pray he would have a car wreck and die. He taught me about principles before personalities. Because I was going to go to that meeting praying that he'd die on the way and just wait to see whether he showed up or not. And I mean, every time. Now, he didn't care if it was birthday night and we had 12 people, you know, big night. And I'd say, my name's Sandy and I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And he'd scream about them stupid hemorrhoids. And I'd say, what has that got to do with it? He said, that's exactly right. You know, and I just, I mean, he didn't care if he embarrassed you. I mean, I hated him. And finally I asked somebody, why in the world does he always pick on me like that? And they said, Sandy, come let me tell you. If you're an alcoholic and anything else in these rooms, you're saying you're different from us. And if you're different from us, what we're doing might not work for you. Why don't you get in Bill's story and see if you can identify with how he felt? Oh, I can do that. You know, if he'd have told me that instead of screaming about the stupid hemorrhoids, I might, you know. So I got in Bill's story and I could identify with a lot about what Bill said. Not that he was a stockbroker or any of that kind of crap, but about how he felt and where his drinking took him. He talks about, you know, in big words, and they had to be explained to me what they meant. But in the big words, he said, you know, that once, you know, if you say something about my drinking, I don't mess with you no more. But he talks about his friends demonstrating in a row or something like that. I mean, and I try not to quote the book because I always get it wrong. And he talks about stealing from his wife. I mean, anything wasn't tied down, I stole. And he talked about wanting to commit suicide and not having enough courage, you know, about pulling the mattress to the floor. And how many times have I went to bed and wanted to die? I wanted to be anywhere except where I was. You know, how many times have I woke up and wanted to die? Because I didn't know who he was or didn't know where I was or, you know, it was just, you know, how many times? You know, I didn't have enough guts to kill myself. I was a big coward. And he talks about, you know, waking up with drinking and doing drugs. I mean, he worked it different, but that's what he does, you know, and I did that. And he talks about the loneliness that he felt inside. And I know that feeling, you know, that's what I come here with. That's the reason I drank, was because of that feeling, you know, so I could definitely identify with Bill. And he talks, not in his story, but it talks about that restless, irritable, and discontented. And that we get the sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by a drink. And that's the reason I drank, for that ease and comfort. So I could identify myself as an alcoholic. Because I was sitting in rooms. I got sober when I was 26. And there was not any young people in the meetings. There was old guys looking like they should have been buried 10 years ago. You know, the women come in, looked like they were a rug. I mean, they were hard and... I mean, and I look that way. I mean, just hard and worn and rough and crusty and just beat down. And I don't mean that offensive at all. I mean, that's just what I saw. And, you know, I didn't think I was old enough to be an alcoholic because I thought it was about how much you drank. I thought it was about a lot of things other than what it was. So I go back to the meeting. It's birthday night and I'm waiting on this old fart. And because I'm laying in the gap waiting on him, you know. I ain't saying that I'm an alcoholic. And I listen. I didn't know I had the pure power to cure hemorrhoids. He didn't scream about the stupid hemorrhoids. We had a secret business meeting. We nominated like the oldest guy in there to go and tell him he needs to settle down and quit running off newcomers and all that kind of stuff. Go to his house and tell him, okay? This guy, he walked out there, I mean, he's all broad-shouldered going out the door. He come back, he looked like a little wolf dog. That guy told him what for. He continued to run them newcomers off. But you know what he always said? He said, liquor will bring them back. And you know what? He was the first one there to greet them when they come back. And they'd sit right there and cuss him out. Because he was the reason they went out and got drunk. And he said he didn't realize he had that much power. But about 5 years sober, I get real, you know, we get in this big book and we do the 12 steps. And, I mean, we're out saving the world and there's a pack of us running around. And whoever had the biggest car drove. And you know, we were all over the southeast of Georgia trying to save souls. And I done an inventory. I done the steps. And then this guy asked me out on an AA date. Well, newcomer, let me tell you about an AA date. You're going to love this. The guy or girl comes in and gets you or whatever and takes you. And you go to dinner either before or after the meeting, and then they take you home and they leave. I didn't see the point of an AA date. You know, you get at the steps, you don't know whether to kiss them or close with the Lord's Prayer. <You know? laughs> Me and this guy started dating, and it wasn't long. He put a ring on my finger, and he asked me to marry him. Now, while I was out there in them streets, I wasn't marriage material, but, you know, I then got sober and got cleaned up, and he knew about me, and he put a ring on my finger, and he asked me to marry him. And when I was in my cups, I was in New Orleans, Louisiana, and I'm down there on the streets, and nobody knew where I was. My family didn't, and my oldest brother came down there, and he found me, and he didn't like what he saw, and he picked me up by my by my collar and, you know, disown me right there and drop me like a sack of potatoes. You know, and before I come into AA, you know, going to those family reunions was always hard because I had to drink just enough to give me the courage to go, but not so much that I would show out, you know, and tell him what for and, you know, where he could go and all that kind of stuff. And he looked at me like he was looking through a pane of glass. He didn't see anything. And I died a million deaths at those family reunions. And because of the process of the steps and the amends and everything, I got to go to him and say, you know what? I put you in God's spot in my life. I love you with all my heart, and I need a brother. But you're not God in my life anymore. And I will not do the things that I used to do for your approval. And I walked away from there, and I was free. The guy that used to beat me up the last time I saw him, he told me, if I ever see you again, bitch, you're going to die. And I knew he meant it. Because, I mean, that's the kind of people I was running with. And you know, one time I'm up at my mama's house, and I'm about 2 years sober, and I'm running down the road, and I see his car, and I pull in the alley. And I know this is not the freedom that we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous, because he was on my never list. I was never going to make amends to him. And I knew it'd come that time. And I called and made an appointment to see him. I'm an alcoholic. I'm not stupid. I made it in public where in case he killed me, there'd be witnesses, you know. But I didn't want to have to pull in alleys anymore for anybody. And I made my amends to him, and I walked away from there free. You know, that's what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous offers us, is freedom from the bondage of self. And when I got married, my oldest brother walked me down the aisle, and he gave me away. And, I mean, the fact that he even come was just amazing. You know, and we got married, and Al Anon's took that $50 that I had and threw us the biggest wedding you'd ever seen. You know, many people. I'm serious. I mean, I don't know how they did all they did with that money. I mean, that was back before inflation, obviously. You know what they did. You know what they did. I know what they did. Today, I know what I do for the girls that I sponsor. I take their $2, and then I do what I want to do. I don't care what it costs. I mean, it's God's money. It's not mine, you know? And that's what those Al-Anon ladies did for me. You know, I'll be forever grateful. You know, we walked out of that church that day, and we went to an AA conference, and then we walked off in the sunset and burned up. We did. About 5 years sober, I realized I just can't do this anymore. But I go to an AA conference, and I sleep with a speaker. I mean, go for the top, right? And I come home, and I can't live with this man anymore. And today I know it's because I wasn't honest. That's my part. If I could do it over again, would I do it and not hurt so many people? You damn right I would. But that's not what happened. I come home, and everybody took sides. And nobody was on my side except this old guy who I kept praying that would die. He didn't take sides. He said that I could talk to him about me, but I could not talk to him about soon-to-be ex-husband. And I was called the whore in the rooms, and I'm 5 years sober. And I can't go to these meetings anymore because y'all took his side and because I had done shown out, and I'm getting the consequences of my actions. And there's no love and tolerance. I mean, and you know, it was what it was. You know, today, friends that go through divorces, I'll listen to what you have to say, but I won't listen to you talk about him, and I'm not taking sides because I've been there, and it's painful. And I'll be forever grateful for the program of Narcotics Anonymous because they gave me a place to go. They didn't know who I was and didn't care. I respected that fellowship and said I was an addict when I was in those rooms. And I didn't try to change it or nothing. I had a safe place to go because Alcoholics Anonymous was not safe for me anymore. I went to a meeting of AA before I went to NA, and, you know, somebody called me a whore. And I got up in the middle of that room, and I cussed every one of them out. You know, because that was not a place that I mean, that's what I do. I mean, you attack me, and I come out fighting, and that's what I did. And I left that meeting, never to darken the doors again, you know, that day. And I'm 5 years sober, and taking a drink isn't an option for me, but blowing my brains out certainly is. You know, and at this time, the old guy that I had cured, you know, he was so mean to newcomers, and I mean, you give me 5 minutes and I take his inventory and tell you how bad he was treating people and, you know, how he's running people off and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, I mean, I took his inventory up one side and down the other. And we didn't do much talking. I mean, because most of mine was cussing. And that day when I'm looking at that pistol, I call him because I know he's got a solution. And he said, honey, get in the car. Just like he always told me, honey, get in the car. You know, it's magic words, get in the car. Well, first he said, can you drive? And I said, yeah. He said, get in the car. And he said, come over to the house. And, you know, when I went over to his house, that was the first time I talked to him in a couple of years, you know, nicely. And he didn't say on the phone, well, honey, you need to dial another number because of, you know, when you said this or you said that or you said the other. He said, get in the car. And when I got to his house, he was at the front steps with his arms out. And I just fell in him. That is Alcoholics Anonymous at its base level. No judgment, no condemnation. Just one alcoholic helping him, one that's just dying. You know, dying. And him and his wife were tapers in the Southeast, and they put me in their back pocket. I didn't have money for conferences. I mean, they're expensive. You know, but he let me work the tape table in a way that I felt like I could pay for my room and my board. And I didn't eat the steak, you know. I was trying to work my way, you know. And I heard a speaker from California say that he sat in a meeting with three of his ex-wives. And I promise you, I talked to him after that. He got finished. Because I think mine and that husband's was the first divorce ever in AA down south. Because nobody knew what to do with it, you know. And it wasn't long after that I'm sitting in a district meeting because I'm district secretary, and in comes ex-husband. I'm going, oh, God, not today. Not today. You know how the business meetings are all chattery and everybody's talking? And when he walked in, I mean, there was a hush fell over the room. You could have heard a pin drop. I'm going, oh, God, not today. I got up out of my chair. I walked that mile across that room. And I stuck my hand out and I said, I'm glad you're here. I did not say I was glad to see him there because I wasn't. I wish he'd anywhere else except there. But I stuck my hand out and I told him I was glad he was there. You know, and the chatter picked back up and all that kind of stuff. And we had I was free in that meeting. I didn't know every time he picked up his fork. I didn't know who he was looking at and I didn't know who he was talking to. And I didn't know what page he was on or whatever literature he was reading. I was free when I got up and walked across that room. That's what them men's do for me. You know, it relieves me of that bondage of self. Not long after that, I think lack of children is my dilemma. Yeah, I mean, I don't have any. And so I found a guy that had a couple and made their business my business. Lack of children is not my dilemma. But you know what? I've always been kind of like Tarzan going through the woods. I won't let go of a vine unless I got a firm grip on another one. Yeah. That's the best I can clean that up. These kids were involved, and I didn't swing out on another man. You know, for the first time in my life, I left a relationship without one waiting. And it was scary. And I was thinking about somebody else other than myself. I was thinking about these couple of kids. Because of the principles in Alcoholics Anonymous, y'all had shown me how to be a good parent to these two kids. Y'all had shown me, and I took the principles of AA into the home because he hated her because she left him for another woman, okay? And his pride was hurt bad. She hated him for whatever reason. And when they get the kids in, you know, everybody was in a big fight. I told him, I said, you cannot talk about her anymore in front of me and those kids. Because you're making them choose between their parents, and they shouldn't have to do that. They should be able to love both parents okay. I told her the same thing, you know, and she never did. I told her I wasn't trying to take her place. I just wanted a chance to take care of those kids. You know, when we had a good relationship, when Travis graduated, that was the son. There was me and my new husband on the field. There was his mother and her girlfriend on the field, her partner. And there was the dad and his new wife on the field and all the grandmas. And wasn't none of us fighting. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. Principles before personalities. At its best. Because we're talking about down south. You know. Yeah. I don't think I can ever do another marriage. I'm not good with relationships. I'm kicking, screaming 2-year-old. I want everything my way. And you can't have a successful relationship based on those principles. So I'm living in this apartment, and a nosy neighbor says, I know a guy you need to meet. I'm going, no, thank you. She said, but Sandy, he needs you. Yeah. Okay, tell him to call me. But I did not give her my phone number. I didn't know he's a telephone man. They have their ways. So he comes down to see me, and we put on a pot of coffee, and before I know it, you know, it's 11 o'clock at night. And I found a friend, and that was what both of us were looking for. He was coming out of a divorce. I was not divorced from the guy with the kids yet. I know he was at the house one day, and somebody knocked on the door, and I shoved him in the closet. Because I didn't want those kids to think that there was somebody else, you know. And today it seems pretty ridiculous, but he went willingly into the closet that night. and we started on this journey, and he had some friends come in from town, and I went down to his house. I mean, he was like two houses down. I went down to his house and spent the weekend, and it was just wonderful. And I knew that I was coming to a place in my sobriety where if I didn't do something different, I went to that old guy, the guy I cured with the hemorrhoids, because he was sponsoring me at this time. And I asked him, I said, how come I keep picking these sick men? He said, honey, you know the only common denominator in all those relationships you've had? I said, yeah, sick men. He said, no, you. That will make you mad. I cussed him out and left his house. Because that's what I do at that time. And he said, Ted was talking about riddles, and he kept saying, if you keep fishing in the same pond, you're going to keep catching the same fish. Well, I don't fish, so I don't know what he's talking about. I'm going, okay. I know today what he was talking about. He explained it to me since, but back then I didn't know. And me and this guy start dating, and I know that if I don't change, nothing's going to change, just like always. And, you know, I can't make any of them different, so I'll be okay. It's got to come in the other way around. And I tell this guy, because we're dating pretty heavy, and I really like him and stuff, and I say, you know what, I need to take some time for me, and I don't know how long that's going to take. And he said, a week, a month? You know, I don't know. I said, but I cannot ask you to wait. And but I need to do some work on me. And what I did was sit down, and I done a relationship inventory like I'd never done. And what I come up with was not really scientific or any of that kind of stuff. I'm a kicking, screaming 2-year-old. I want everything my way. I want it now, and I'm not sharing. That is not basis for a successful relationship. You know, and I saw the reality about me, and I asked God to take me to someplace different. And I don't know where that place is, you know. I don't ever know where it is. So I asked God to take me, you know, take me wherever you need me to be. But I want to be different than I am today. And that day, now we hadn't seen each other for probably about a month. And that day he called me, this guy. His name is Wendell. And he called me, he said, I need to talk to you. And I said, you know what, I need to talk to you too. Because I woke up and I knew that I knew. I knew that I wanted to be different. And God put in my head, you know, you can be a kind, loving wife. You can act as if you're a kind, loving wife. That's what y'all tell me to do here. Act as if you're sober. Act as if you care. Act as if you want to listen. You know? Well, that was my instructions when I first started sponsoring. You know, act as if. So this guy, you know, called me, and we started dating, and I said, AA comes first, no questions, because when I was married to the guy with the kids, I went to one meeting a week, whether I needed it or not, and I was crazy. And I tried to be tough and bad like this man sponsor I had, you know, because I had asked other women to sponsor me, and everybody told me no. I guess my reputation one more time preceded me. And I was told no a lot. I mean, a lot. I'd go to my meetings. I don't know about y'all, but I'd go to my meetings, listen for my message from God, And then I pick up the phone and call and ask these women to sponsor me, and they say no. So I get a tape in the mail, and I'm forever grateful for the tapers because they absolutely saved my life on more than one occasion. And I get a tape in the mail, and this lady says her first and last name from the podium. You know, because if I don't tell you my last name, Sandy H. is not in the phone book in Rio Rancho. Sandy Hickox is. You know, and she said that she was at a time in her sobriety where she had to get in AA or get out. And I knew that I was there, you know, and but I didn't know how. So I got her name from the taper. It took us a couple of days to catch up, and I asked her if she'd sponsor me. She said, oh, yeah, honey. Yeah, let's visit. how many meetings are you going to a week? Well, I'm going to one. I can't tell her that I've cussed everybody out, you know, because of that past experience. I don't go back to those meetings. She said, oh, that's going to change. I said, okay. She said, we're going to go through the big book. And I've been sitting in a big book meeting ever since I've been sober. I am one of the original big book thumpers. But out loud to her, I said, okay. She said, you're going to wear a dress to your home group meeting. I said, a dress? Down south, that's what we bury people in. You don't wear a dress to meetings. You go comfortable. You know, out loud to her, I said, yes, ma'am. She said, we're going to set a call time convenient to her. I'm thinking to myself, convenient to you? I am asking you to be my sponsor. I should be accessible to you 24/7. But out loud to her, I said, yes, ma'am. She said, we're going to go through that book, and we did those things. We made a call time convenient to her, and we went through that big book, and every week was my call time. I called her. I started wearing the dress. She said, you got to get a commitment at a meeting. And where I get sober, I mean, the chairperson does it all. I mean, they come in, they set up everything, you know. And I said, a commitment. But she said, yeah, you like to pee on a clean toilet, don't you? I go, yeah. She said, that's your commitment. Okay, imagine this. This is where I come from at its best. I'm in a dress, on my knees in the bathroom, scrubbing a dirty toilet, and I got people at the door. Get a sponsor! Look what they'll make you do! Get a sponsor! That's what you want, right there. You know, and I wanted to throw that brush at them. But I can't hit people no more in meetings, so I can't do that. But you know what? She softened me up. She softened me up, and with her guidance and direction, and I was willing to do anything she says, still am. You know, I started changing, and I had some women ask me to sponsor them. Me and this guy got married, you know. He asked me to marry him. I said, Wendell, I'll marry you one day at a time. I've been married forever 3 times. I'm not doing that again. I can be a faithful wife one day. I can be a kind, loving wife one day. Not tomorrow. Today. I can act like I care today. One day. You know, and it put a whole different spin on our relationship. You know, and when I told him AA come first, I don't think any one of us realized what that entailed. Because there's a lot of times, I'm asked to speak occasionally, and there's a lot of times when he's sitting there at home by himself. You know, when I'm sponsoring women. You know, if he's not driving the bus, he's home by himself. You know, he cooks for us, you know, and he has been a sober example of a man for some of these girls, because a lot of times we come in here and we're just beat up. We're beat up and we're abused by men. And my husband is a gentleman. Give me, I love this story. I take one of the girls I sponsor to a conference, right? So Wendell's a gentleman, he opens up the door. She slams it shut. He opens it up, she slams it shut. I mean, about 5 times, finally he said, Jan, stop. I'm trying to open the door for you. Oh, she had no clue. That's the kind of stuff he does for the girls I sponsor. You know, and I sponsored. The old guy told me one time, he said, honey, when you get comfortable, when you find out who you are, who anybody else is will not matter. I had a black lady ask me to sponsor her, and this is down south. Now, I know what you've heard, but it ain't true. I worked at a job, and I was talking to a black guy, and there were KKK things all over my machine when I got back. We have been at conferences, me and this lady that I sponsored, and we've had people look at us. We've had people spit on us, you know, down south. So what you hear is I mean, it is what it is. You know, but I went to the old guy and I said, I can't sponsor a black woman. He says, how come? I said, because she's black. He said, Sandy, where in that book does it say black alcoholic, white alcoholic? I hunted for it. I swear I did. It ain't in there. It ain't in there. I said, but Bob, he said, you're going to have to make a decision whether you're going to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous or where you're going to keep just hold on to them old ideas and let them kill you. And I grew through that. And I'll be forever grateful for that moment. We had so much fun. Oh, my gosh. I had this gay girl ask me to sponsor her. And I went to Bob. I said, I can't sponsor that gay girl. He said, honey, when you get okay with your sexuality, hers won't matter to you. I walked through that. You know, and we had a ball. Every lesson, not every lesson, a lot of lessons that I learn about me is through the girls I sponsor. You know, because I lose those old ideas. I lose that judgment. I lose all that because they make me, you know. And I always get the good sick ones. I mean, the sick ones. I don't get the pretty ones all put together. And I'm grateful because I get to see past that crap. I get to remember where I was when I come here. You know, and I get to do for them what y'all did for me. And that is huge. I got a couple of stories. I'm real spiritual as long as I got money. My husband's got a good job. We got the sports car in the yard. And he loses his job. Now, how's that going to make me look? That's my first thought. It wasn't about him. My sponsor says, you're going to go to the meeting, you're going to tell them. I said, I can't do that. The sports car, we can't pay for the sports car. It's got to go. She said, you're going to go to the meeting and tell them. I said, I cannot do that. You know, the bank's going to come back and get it because we can't pay for it. She said, go to the meeting and tell them. I go to the meeting and I tell y'all. You know, and she said, Sandy, they need a sober example of what this looks like. You can be that. Or you cannot be that. I had to ask the girls, and I'm always the one, come go with me, we'll go, come, you know, ride in my car, whatever. I had to start asking those girls that I sponsored for rides. I told my sponsor, I can't do that. She said, okay, walk to the meeting then. So I asked the girls that I sponsored, will you give me a ride? You know, and I don't ever want to forget those lessons. It is so much easier to give an Alcoholics Anonymous than it is to receive. I have found that. And I know how hard it is. The old guy that I cured he keeps coming back in the picture. He allowed my husband the dignity to paint his cabinets, you know, so we would have grocery money. There was this old timer in the meetings, and her husband were on welfare, and she said, come over here. That's how she talked. Okay, Juanita, I'll be right there. She said, damn, alcoholics got so much pride. I'm going, we sure do, Juanita. She patted me on the butt. And she said, I got this welfare cheese. I hate cheese. Take it. She had in there, she had flour, she had cheese, she had that ox milk, the dry powder milk. She had all kind of stuff in that bag. And when she patted me on the butt, she put $10 in my pocket. And that was gas money. And this is a lady on welfare, and that's what she did for me, because she knew us alcoholics got so much damn pride. That's what y'all do for me. We Wendell looks for jobs and can't find them and stuff like that, and I got a couple more stories and I'll be quick. And we put his resume on the internet in a place in Idaho, pick him up. Telephone company out there. Now, Iowa, Idaho, where's that? Where are we going? And we go to Idaho. And it was like God opened up the fairy tale book and threw both of us in it and said, y'all just have a good time. And we played and we learned how to ski and he was making good money. And, you know, I got settled in a women's meeting there and I started sponsoring girls. And, I mean, just it was beautiful. Idaho is beautiful country. And my mother gets sick. And I said, well, Mama, come to Idaho and stay with us. Oh, no, I'm not living with you. You know, I used to be a little hellion. And And because of amends and stuff like that, I would call Mama every week, and she would hear me happy because that's what she wanted. I paid her $25 a week to pay back all that money. And finally she said, you don't need to send the money anymore, but I like the notes. And I would call her every week. And she said, I'm not coming out there. And I said, well, come out here for a week. And if you don't like it, we'll take you back home. Because she got sick, she couldn't stay by herself. And then she come out for a week. She had a bag packed for a week. And she stayed. And because of the examples of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was able to show her what a kind loving daughter looked like. We had so much fun. She loved my husband a lot more than me, which is fun. I'll give you an example of that. She would send $10 in the birthday card. I mean, she's very, you know, she does for one, she does for all. And she said, well, make sure you share it with Wendell. My $10 birthday money, I got to share with him. Now, when he got his $10 birthday money, there was not a note in there, share with Sandy. He got to keep all of his. And I picked at her a lot about that. But she came out to Idaho, and we just had a ball, and I was able to show her what Alcoholics Anonymous had done for her daughter. She got to see me she would see me come and speak, and, you know, she would see the women come to the house, and we'd sit around. That's where we were sitting around the table, and that's where I heard that she didn't kick me out. That she told me I couldn't drink in her roof was in Idaho, around the table with the girls I was sponsoring, you know. And about this time, we wake up one morning, and my husband can't talk. We go to the emergency room, and he has had a stroke. And he can't read, and he can't write, he can't talk. And I used to speak at him about all that useless information that he had in his head, you know. He knew facts about everything. And he can't get to that now. And sometimes it's hard for me. But my mother was the one that taught him how to read. She would sit at the table with him during the day and, you know, the Dick Jane books, you know. She taught him, again, how to read. And y'all brought a meeting to our house when Wendell had a stroke. And my mother was able to sit in on that meeting, and she felt the presence of God like she had never felt in any church. And she told us that after y'all left. She had never seen so much love and caring and understanding and compassion and food as what y'all brought. And that was in Idaho, and that's what y'all do. That's what we do for each other. And when she died in Idaho, and when she took her last breath, the physician that was by her bedside was in program. The nurse was in program. There was me and Wendell, and we said the Lord's Prayer when she took her last breath. You know, and that's what y'all do for us. Y'all stand in the good times and in bad. You know, and at her funeral, my brothers came out to Idaho, and they met you, and at that time, the home group that I attended met on Sunday night, and my brothers were welcome to attend. It was an open meeting. And my oldest brother, y'all got him. Y'all touched his heart like he's never been touched before, because he's told me that he's never felt what he felt in that room. He can't explain it yet. But he always asked me, you still going to them meetings? Yeah. He said, it's good for you. He said, I really liked that one I went to. You know, and that's powerful for me from where we come. Our life in Idaho is going pretty good. Economy's bad, of course, and Wendell gets transferred to Albuquerque, New Mexico. I've moved before. I know how to do that. But there's that fear. You know, you go somewhere, you got some time, they're not doing it right, you go away and get drunk. And Albuquerque, New Mexico is a million people. It's big. And I had a hard time settling in there. The meetings, they're big, but, I mean, 10 minutes till 8, nobody's there. 5 minutes till 8, everybody whooshes in and whooshes out. And I say my first and last name, and everybody looks at me funny. I mean, I talk funny anyway, but they look at you. And I finally find the ladies' room, and it's a ladies' meeting, and I become, my sponsor said, you sit, gotta go back to that newcomer stuff, go back to the basics. I sit in the same chair every week. So even though they don't know my name, they know whether I'm there or not. I take a commitment at that meeting, and I don't tell them nothing unless they ask. Nothing. No opinions, nothing, unless they ask. And I got a commitment at that meeting, and I'm finally starting to settle down there, but it's been a hard move. I got a job, and, you know, it's kind of like God knew that I needed some time in Albuquerque because I wasn't asked to speak anywhere for about a year. And now I'm getting asked out again, you know, and I guess because I got my roots under me. I want to thank you so much for like a trip of a lifetime for me and my husband. And I appreciate the opportunity to even bring him here because a lot of times we don't get to do that. And I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.